Good afternoon. House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Members, we are going to be embarking on marking up our omnibus supplemental today, so I'm hoping we can kind of get down to business and have a good discussion. If we need to come back after our allotted committee time, we do have room 10 reserved tonight after session. So we'll see how it goes. If we can finish by 2:30, terrific. If not, we'll come back. With that, let's go ahead and move the minutes. Representative Bennett, would you like to move the minutes from April 13th?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes.
All right. And just already noted, we will be correcting the spelling of Ms. Chris' first name. And so that's already been done. Representative Bennett's moved the minutes. Any discussion?
Sure.
Questions? All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Minutes are adopted. All right. So first, I just want to open it up. If any members have questions you wanted to ask about the delete all, as we've done the walkthrough, we've taken public testimony, anything from myself or from nonpartisan staff that you need clarified? All right. I'm not seeing anybody rush to ask a question. So with that, I will formally move House File 3858 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And I have the A16 delete all amendment. So I will move that. And so now the A16 amendment is before us. And again, that's the delete all. And it can be subject to amendment. And we did have a number of amendments that were filed by our deadline last night. And so with that, I will go ahead and move the first amendment, the A9 amendment in your packets. A9-3. All right, and members, as you're pulling that out, I'll just describe it. This is really just kind of a cleanup amendment, if you will. A few technical things that a couple of technical things that the department had asked for language that was in the policy bill or other things, a couple of technical things that the Board of Teaching had suggested and wording on the Montessori licensure provision clarifies that the current Q programs would qualify for additional grant funding in fiscal year 17 above their current grant funding. Per our proposal, it would expand language on the Grow Your Own Residency Program so that funding can be used for either scholarships or stipends. Again, this was a suggestion brought to us by, I believe, St. Paul Public Schools. Include some special education language from the department that they had asked would be included, that they were hoping would be in the original, was inadvertently admitted. Replacing an and with an or within the early learning coordination language to, and that was a request from the ECFE programs. And then there were some technical corrections to align the fiscal figures to the tracking sheet, just some errors on numbers. So that's basically the A9-3 amendment. Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. A9-3 amendment is adopted. I'll go ahead with my next one as well, A15 amendment in your packets. All right, and as members are pulling that out, this amendment affects some of the duties and abilities of the school trust lands director. It would allow the trust director to enter into joint powers agreements so that they could work directly with units of local governments on management issues to the school trust. This would allow the trust director to analyze management efficiencies and costs in relation to DNR cost structures. And just an example, if a forest management agreement with Cass County, they could enter into a joint powers agreement with Cass County to sell school trust timber. Cass County recoups its costs, and the trust director would analyze the management costs of that. It also could affect real estate development, and again, this would allow the trust director to advance a number of school trust projects at DNR as currently shelved. And another example that was brought to our attention was there is a 27-acre school trust parcel on St. Mary's Lake in St. Louis County with access, utilities, and amenities. And the goal of the trust director, as he had communicated to us, is to plat the parcel through St. Louis County in the city of Eveleth and market the platted property to developers or individual build sites. And again, obviously, the school trust would benefit from those actions. So, any questions on that amendment or discussion? And committee administrator is reminding me that this came to us from the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, which looked at this as well, but it's more in the jurisdiction of the Education Committee, so they sent it to us. All right. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, did they send it with an explanation of why they were recommending it? Just that we could make money off the land, but...
Representative Murphy, these are things that our new trust director has identified as things that would really empower him to do his job, and I think the Environment and Natural Resources Chair has indicated he thinks this would be within his mission and that, but rather than move it in their committee, they wisely referred it here.
And Madam Chair, are there trees planted on that land now and to be harvested or not?
The Cass County,
yes,
there are. And I don't know how many acres that is. If you have a question on that, I can try to get that information for you. I don't have that in front of me.
That's just an example.
Right. And it is also given as an example. It's not necessarily a very specific, this is exactly what will happen. It's an example of the type of things the trust director could do in entering into joint powers agreements. Representative Newton.
Madam Chair, I'm the co-chair of the trust committee, and we've discussed this, and it's really to give the new director, some authority and to separate him from the DNR in terms of being able to negotiate and to work better with land management.
Yes, thank you, Representative Newton. And I've had the chance to meet with the director, and obviously he's come before the committee this year to provide some testimony on his work and that. But I think this really will empower him again to do what I think the committee would like him to be working on, and for in the best interest of the school children in managing the trust. All right. Seeing no other questions, all in favor of the A15 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, amendment is adopted. All right, and I will do one other one. A27. And the A27 amendment is just a little cleanup language for the St. Cloud pilot program. As you may recall, we heard the testimony on this. This is a preschool pilot program St. Cloud Public Schools like to do to specifically outreach to children whose English is not their first language, English language learners in the St. Cloud Public School program. So this is just a little cleanup language on that provision. Any questions or discussion? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, only very quickly, I just want to acknowledge that in the delete all amendment, there was additional language, additional to Representative Oblak's original bill, in order to create some kind of reporting back to us. I thought that was critically important. We should learn something from what's happening there, so I think this is all moving in the right direction.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. I would agree. All right. Not seeing any other comments or questions. All in favor of the A27 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment's adopted. Thank you. Let's see. Representative Kresha, do you want to go ahead and offer A26? Or you've got a couple of amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if we could, we can discuss the A25 and the A26 right away if you'd like. They're the same topic.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and discuss them both, and then we'll take them sequentially.
Okay. So the members, the A25 in our bill, we're dealing with mobile hotspots, and in there we have the aspiration of where we're going, which is to allow mobile devices and mobile hotspots and bus, but we don't necessarily need to put in statute specifically what's going to happen with that. We'll let the schools handle that. So this is just to delete that provision, but to keep the intent of allowing rural schools to be wired through their buses. And then in conjunction with that, on the 826, what we're doing, which is just all schools are doing this anyway, but we want to make sure that we have our responsibility to filtered content that is consistent with acceptable use policies for the local schools. Local schools have acceptable use policies for the internet. We want to make sure that extends out to any device that may go home with the kids.
Thank you, Representative Precia. Any questions on the A25 or A26 amendment as they have been described? All right, so let's vote first on the A25 amendment, which deletes the unnecessary language on the buses being parked. All in favor of the A25, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, A25 is adopted. All right, and now on A26, and I guess this has to do with the filtering of the content from the internet with mobile devices. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. A26 is adopted. Thank you. And do you want to do your last amendment?
I can. Thank you, Madam Chair. The last one that I have is the A41 members, and this is just agreement on collecting what's DHS and MDE has on the demographics of preschool programs. This is data that's already out there. We just want to put it and consolidate it, and this is working with Representative Flanagan and Representative Mariani.
All right, and members, if you didn't hear, it's A41 if you were looking for the number. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative Crusher, I think this is a good first start. What we know, to use a tagline, is you can't be it if you don't see it. And we need to know who's teaching the kids and the cultural implications of that for particularly for students of color. And this is a first step to start ascertaining and then holding providers accountable to employing the best teachers, but also making sure that we're able to track teachers of color in these settings as well. So it's a good first step. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Other questions or comments? All right. And it is acceptable to the chair. So thank you, Representative Crescia. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Slocum, would you like to move your A35 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move A35. And what it does is it, on page 60 of the bill, in line 23, it deletes school authorizers and just inserts schools, because the authorizers of the charters don't have anything to do with discipline. It's more an overseer of the financials and the running of the school. Inside the schools is where they develop the discipline policy. So this is just correcting language.
Any questions or comments on A35? All right, and the chair does support this amendment. Seeing no further comments, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment A35 is adopted. Thank you, Representative Slocum. Let's see, Representative Detmer, I have an amendment from you, A18-1.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move A18-1.
All right, A18-1. And please describe your amendment.
Well, Madam Chair, first of all, I'd like to recognize a special person that's here today, a teacher at Forest Lake High School. In fact, he was a student of mine back in the day, graduated in 88, and went on to St. Thomas University. And I got to coach him in wrestling. He was an All-American at St. Thomas, and he came back to Forest Lake and got into teaching. He's been teaching there since the early 90s. And I'd like to recognize Rich Elliott right here. So. Thank you for coming in.
All right. Representative Detmer, you seem to have inspired a lot of young people to become teachers.
In fact, I remember there was one time when Mr. Elliott called me. I think originally he wasn't majoring in education. And he called me up. He says, "Do you think I'd be a good teacher?" And I said, "You bet you will." And he got into education and coaching, and he's been a big part of the staff at Forest Lake High School.
Very good. Thank you for being with us today.
The A18A1, I started looking at some things in the state statute on regarding statute 2014, section 123B.49. It talks about finance in terms of fees for students that are taking be involved in athletics in their schools and their homeschool. Then I start thinking about, well, what about those students that are taking online classes and they're at home taking online classes? So I got on the phone and called the superintendent and also an activities director, and they say, yeah, as long as they can show that they're making progress towards graduation, they would fall into the same rules and policies that the homeschool students would be. So basically what this will do, it will allow full-time online students to participate in extracurricular activities in their resident district. So they would have to be living in that district. So, thank you.
All right. Any questions on the A18-1 amendment? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess start with a question for Representative Detmer. You indicated in your presentation that this applied to full-time online school students, but that's not the language of the amendment. And I'm wondering if you can help me understand that, because there are, my daughter did attend school full time, but she did an online class at one point. Actually, it was Phi Ed, ironically enough.
Online?
No, true story. I'm going to try to recollect here in a moment. But there are students, you know, who may take an online course in any district, and as I said, you said full time, but that's not.
Well, okay, I apologize. And if you look online, 1.10, 1.11, it would read all resident pupils enrolled in online public school program. So I stand corrected.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Dabney,
I was more trying to understand the meaning. Certainly not trying to castigate you or embarrass you in any way. But it does raise some issues. If I'm taking one online class from somewhere, I now have abilities to play sports in different places or be on the debate team or whatever. That my understanding is there's now a hockey school developed in Minnesota where the kids play hockey all day, 6 hours a day, and then do online classes. So the MSHSL has dealt with that and said, you know, you kind of can play hockey at your hockey school. But this would allow them to instead come and bump somebody off of their resident district's hockey team. It doesn't seem fair to me that I play hockey in one place and then I get to come and bump somebody off of my high school hockey team at the same time.
Madam Chair, that's a good point, that you could raise that point for any type of sport where students are, whether they're homeschooled or they're online students, they can be part of a club someplace. But I think what the athletic activities director pointed out to me is that they would have to make sure that they're going to be graduating on time, and that they had no problems with this legislation. Talking to school people.
Madam Chair, so yeah. The MSHSL is in support of this amendment? Is that, am I understanding you correctly?
Well, if it falls under the same statute, I see no problems with it. Now, I haven't contacted the State High School League on this.
Okay. So, all right. Madam Chair, I'm just troubled. I think choices have consequences. And, you know, when my son was moving from elementary school to middle school. We looked at a couple of options in our school district. He likes to sing and dance and act and that sort of thing. And the school, one of the schools offered that and another didn't. Mm-hmm. And we kind of did, you know, you divide the paper in half and the plus and the minus and you list them all out. And even though he loves that, we chose to put him in a school that doesn't offer any of the theater sort of things because of other reasons. We don't then go and say, well, he should get all these benefits but also get this benefit from over here. We recognize and we're teaching him that decisions have consequences. And I think if you choose a school, you choose a school, and it's damaging to the kids who choose another school if you then come in and bump them from their participation. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Other comments? Representative Newton.
Madam Chair, I don't have trouble with the amendment, but I'm just looking at the numbering where it comes in on page 36 after line 25, and it's section 34, but you're putting... we already have a section 34 there, and it seems to be a different statute. Is that correct? Does it have to be renumbered, or am I just reading it wrong?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Newton, these drafting conventions can be a little bit confusing. The point here is that the proposal is to insert this section after the section that ends on page 36, line 25. So the next number of section in order would be section 34. So were this to be adopted, this would become 34, assuming there are no other insertions. And the reviser will renumber all of these to incorporate the various insertions. So this is an insertion in front of the existing 34.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Detmer, I certainly support your efforts to make sure that all our students are able to participate as fully as possible in extracurriculars. But I think this language really needs some work. And I'm a little troubled that we've not had a conversation with the High School League about this. One of the things that the High School League does is make sure that there are equal and fair and appropriate rules that are applied across the state for all participants, for all students. And part of those requirements require that our schools, that their educational experience is first and foremost an educational experience. So that's why we have all these eligibility requirements. Mm-hmm. You spoke earlier about, or someone did, about, you know, making sure the folks are, you know, tracking, that they're on time for graduation. I think your language here creates some gray area in that regards. And I think part of that is what Representative Dabney was addressing earlier, with the possibility that a student could be eligible to participate as a result of this language in more than one venue, if you will, residency venue. And part of the reason, my understanding, why we have the residency venue is so that there is an accountability system. There is a reporting happening in terms of, student X is in fact on time with graduation. Student X is in fact attending, courses, completing his or her work, et cetera. My understanding is that that online students, and I'll stand to be corrected, but because I don't dabble in this very much, but that currently you have the eligibility for online students as a result of cooperative sponsorship agreements with the school district that's resident. I think this language now simply jumps over that. Doesn't bar that, but I think it jumps over that. And one of my concerns among many is that it may create that gray area in terms of who's reporting on Johnny, meeting educational standards as a requirement, you know, to be eligible to participate in a sport. So I guess I don't have questions as much as I have perhaps some counsel for you, you know, depending on what happens with this. And I guess my basic counsel is I think you ought to sit down with the high school league and have this conversation with them. I think this creates some real problems, and I suspect you're going to run into bigger road bumps, you know, down the road if this amendment goes on and this bill continues to move forward, unless you're able to have those conversations. I think you could probably work something out here. But I am a little troubled by what I think is a gray area in this case.
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair and Representative, you know, I agree that you know, the state high school has their league has their policies, regardless of whether it's a homeschooling or students transferring from one school to the next and so forth. We need to have those policies. And I was just taking a look at the statute, and I felt that this would fall under the same statute as homeschools. Students that are homeschooled, because you got parents involved in both these cases, whether it's homeschooling or with online. And talking to the administration, one of the school districts that contacted both the superintendent and also the activities director, they saw no problems with it, that they would have to, it would be up to the local school district to make sure that that student is we're going to be graduating on time. And I guess, you know, I like to get this on the bill, and then I'll confer with the State High School League and see what we need, if there's any situations that they have concerns about.
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Detmer, I had a bill that I pulled that is somewhat similar to this to clarify charter school participation in athletics in home districts if the charter school doesn't offer that particular sport. And I met with Mr. Aronson with the high school league, and we are going to have he convinced me to pull the bill, which was not an easy job. And he also said we said we were going to set up a meeting with charter people and with the high school league people and have them kind of hash out, because there's about 60 charter schools that actually do this. And I think it's a communication kind of thing, mm-hmm. but the high school league kind of needs to get on board with the way schools are run today. So I would love to talk to you more about this and have maybe your online school people that you're concerned about participate in this meeting with the high school league.
Madam Chair and Representative, no, I'd have no problem sitting in on that meeting and discussing the two issues. You know, in Forest Lake, I know we have two charter schools, and they're at a point now where they're developing their own athletic programs too. So, but there's some good options out there for parents and families. I think we need to encourage participation, especially when it comes to extracurricular, whether it's athletics or drama or music. We want those kids to be involved in those extracurricular activities.
Other comments, questions? All right, seeing none, all in favor of the A18-1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
The chair's in doubt. We'll do a... All right, let's I'm going to recall the vote just so I can hear clearly. All in favor of the A18 amendment, -1, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
All right, in the opinion of the chair, the A18 amendment is adopted. Representative Seltzer, would you like to offer your amendment?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, I would like to move my amendment.
All
thank
right.
you. And Madam Chair, I don't bring, and members, I thank you for considering this amendment. I don't bring forward amendments very often, but I feel very strongly about this particular section of the bill.
My I think you are the A11 amendment,
yes.
correct? All right. I'm sorry. Members are just looking for the number.
Sorry.
So A11.
Thank you. This amendment would delete the section of the bill that would discontinue the use of the Minnesota Student Survey. And I would agree with that elimination if the student survey... Okay. Everyone good? The A11?
Yes.
Good. Great. Okay. Gee, and I had such a great beginning. So I would agree with eliminating the student survey if nothing was done with the data to improve students' lives and to help them move forward into better futures. But that is just not the case. And I'm just going to quickly give an example from the school district that I served on the board of for 8 years, the Hopkins School District. Certainly, this is not a unique example. A number of years ago, we noted at the in the district level data in the Hopkins schools, our students were using alcohol and other chemicals at an alarming rate. And so with that data, we called in all our stakeholders, parents, guardians, community members, and we developed several initiatives involving the students to attempt to decrease that behavior. And then we used the subsequent Minnesota student surveys to see if our initiatives were having any results, and they were. And certainly substance abuse did not disappear, but it did markedly decrease. And then we used this positive information, we took it to our students, because locally and nationally, teens tend to think that their peers engage in more disruptive or destructive behaviors than healthy behaviors. So we were able to show students in multiple settings and dialoguing student to student that many students did not use alcohol or abuse drugs. So we worked really hard and we started to move towards a culture of non-use in our district. This is just one example of the way this Minnesota student survey has been used and continues to be used across our state, not only by school districts but by state agencies, to plot strategies and such things as improving students' mental health, because that's another issue that we're seeing on a statewide basis flare up, and we actually have several provisions in our bill, which I'm so happy about, that address mental health in our students. So the Minnesota Student Survey is very a useful tool. I would like to see it continued. And I am not going to call for a roll call, but I would ask Madam Chair and conference committee members, there's a faint possibility this amendment may not pass. And so if that would occur in conference committee, I would ask you to seriously consider leaving this student survey in and adding more safeguards, if necessary, to ensure that we protect student privacy, because that is very important. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Seltzer. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate your concerns, Representative Seltzer, but please note that this does not disallow locals from producing their own surveys. What this part of our proposal in our finance policy bill is, it prohibits the commissioner from developing, coordinating, or assisting with the statewide student survey. So districts are certainly allowed to produce their own surveys. This also does not deal with mental health or safety. Those are not included in the list.
Representative Seltzer?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I thought it was. I'll just check quickly. 43, okay. It says, thank you. It says the commissioner must not develop, coordinate, and thank you, Representative Erickson, I appreciate that. The commissioner must not develop, coordinate, assist list, or use a statewide student survey seeking information about a student's activities, opinions, behaviors, or experiences related to substance abuse, which we use, tobacco use, connections with family, healthy eating, high school students' gambling and sexual activities, or out-of-school activities, among other topics. So while it doesn't specifically, you're right, it doesn't specifically mention mental health, I would still say, I would still assert that and that local districts can develop their own surveys, I would still assert that this is an excellent tool that's been proven over time to truly help districts and the state identify trends that may be destructive to students and help develop strategies that will put them back on the path to a healthy future.
All right. Other comments? Questions? All right. Seeing none. All in favor of the A11, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
All right, the amendment does not prevail. Representative Wills, you have an amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A6 amendment.
All right, A6 amendment in your packets, members. Representative Wills, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, this amendment is in response to the concerns that we heard from a testifier in our meeting last week on April 7th from the Partners in Nutrition Group. The testifier had said that they were denied participating in a program that MDE facilitates. It's a federal program, and part of the reason that we heard from MDE that they were not able to approve the program was because they didn't have a sufficient history. And so this is trying to find a way to allow nonprofits who have less than 3 years of financial experience and performance data to have a way to prove that viability, that financial viability. And also, so that would be done by providing a written statement from a certified public accountant, and then also requiring that the commissioner would post on their website the criteria for both nonprofits that have 3 or more years of that history and those who have fewer, since it seems that there's a little bit different process depending on how much history a nonprofit has. So that is the intent of the amendment, and I would ask for your support.
All right. Questions? Debate? It wasn't my intention to take testimony today, Mr. Corday. Is it something urgent or new information for the committee?
Yes.
All right. Please state your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Darren Cordy, Minnesota Department of Education. I will be brief. There was just some things that were not covered last time that I want to make sure the committee is aware of. The CPA statement that's mentioned in this bill, I just wanted to be clear that we never received a CPA statement from Partners in Nutrition as part of their application. Certainly, we've informed them that they're free to reapply at any time, and we would consider that statement as part of their application, but just at this point we couldn't consider it because it wasn't part of their application. Also wanted to note that Partners in Nutrition has appealed that decision, and that appeal is pending, so at this point, by the time this bill gets passed, this whole issue could already be resolved. And lastly, we did check with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, who is the federal supervising authority on this, and they had some concerns with in the bill how it, or in the amendment, how it would basically allow that CPA statement to override the opinion of the state agency when it comes to financial viability, and they thought that that might be in conflict with the federal regulation. So just wanted to bring that to the committee's attention.
Thank you, Mr. Corday. Representative Wills?
Thank you, and I appreciate that additional information, Mr. Corday. And my understanding in the way the language is written, it would not require the department to accept the application, even if a CPA statement was provided. It would just be an additional document that MDE would be able to consider. And then also wanted to point out something I mentioned, or forgot to mention, towards the bottom of the amendment, that if an application had been rejected at some point, the commissioner would use an expedited process to reconsider that application with this new process in place. And even if the situation with Partners in Nutrition is resolved by the time this would become law, I think it's important to have clear criteria for any future nonprofits that would want to participate in this program, just considering the hurdles that Partners in Nutrition had to go through. I'm sure they're not unique in that situation. And also, I am in conversation with the CPAs organization, and they do want to make sure that any language that we have that would affect them is not going to put them in a situation of liability. So I'm working with them to make a tweak, hopefully in conference committee, that would help clarify that for them.
All right, thank you, Representative Wills. Other questions or comments? Representative Wilson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. You know, this is the second amendment now that we've had where there's been some questions raised. And where both the authors have said, well, we'll either fix it in conference committee or we'll fix it later on. That's really the task of this committee. And normally those type of, and they're coming from the majority, usually those type of amendments come from the minority, you know, where you surprise everyone and so forth. You know, I don't know how many more of these there are. You certainly have the votes to do these, but I, you know, just on both of these, I think there are some really legitimate questions. And I know it's not unusual for committees to pass things out and then fix them along the way, but we're really getting towards the end of the process here. And you know, we've heard concerns here, and even Representative Wills is talking about CPAs having some questions and so forth. You know, the folks that, you know, could come and talk about these concerns, you know, they're just, it isn't happening. And so, you know, I'm going to vote no on this. Representative Wills, not because it may be a bad idea, it may be an excellent idea, but I just think that, you know, we've had a lot of, you know, testimony throughout this session already, and now at kind of the last minute we're putting more things into a bill that the majority already has decided this kind of is our bill. And now I can see some minor things, but these are getting to be a little bigger things that may have larger ramifications. So I don't know how many more of these, but just my caution that I don't think this is a real transparent way to legislate, because you don't know what the final result is and you don't even know what the ramifications and implications of these bills are. So just my suggestions on this, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Marquardt. And I, you know, I appreciate your observations there. I think, you know, I just wouldn't confuse, as you described it, a fix with a willingness to continue to refine or revise language that is commonly done as a bill moves through the process. You know, we are at the committee stage, and we've got another couple of committees to go before this reaches the House floor. Representative Wills, I think you wanted to respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Marquardt, I appreciate your concerns. And when the issue was brought to me earlier today, I hadn't thought of that, and it brought concern to me as well. And I asked them, you know, do you want me to pull the amendment? And they told me they're comfortable with it moving forward. It's not a huge issue, and they wanted more time to figure out the exact wording that they'd like. So they actually want to be able to work on it at a later point as opposed to pulling it completely. Because they understand the intent and what we're trying to do. They just want to make it a little bit better and a little clearer. So I would have pulled it if they had been opposed to it.
Other comments? All right, seeing none. All in favor of the A6 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
Amendment is adopted. Representative Fenton, do you want to offer your amendments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So for the A31, currently I move the amendment A31,
all
Madam
right.
Chair.
Representative Fenton moves the A31 amendment.
Madam Chair, members, currently we have programs that have demonstrated high quality standards as evidenced by the fact that these programs hold a 3 or 4 star parent aware rating, and this amendment relates to parent aware. As Minnesota is in short supply for high quality child care with access for low income families, this amendment would establish a provisional parent aware rating should an already established high quality rated program wish to expand to a new location to serve low income families.
All right, thank you, Representative Fenton. And I would just note the pages are handing out a letter from, it would appear, groups advocating for your amendments. So that's coming around to you. Any comments or questions about Representative's A31 amendment? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of the A31 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, A31 amendment is adopted. Do you want to go ahead and offer your other amendment, Representative Fenton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment is, I move the A34 amendment.
All right, Representative Fenton moves the A34 amendment.
And, Madam Chair, I would like to refer to Ms. Larson as this relates to the Q program, but this is a technical cleanup language.
All right, thank you. Ms. Larson. A34, members.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Fenton, yes, thank you. This is intended to be a technical amendment to clarify the terms of the proposed program in your bill. It just hopefully makes a little bit clearer the eligibility, diversity, and performance data implicated in the provision.
Right, so. Any questions of Ms. Larson or Representative Fenton? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And since we're not going to do testimony, and as long as we're on the topic of Representative Fenton's bill, I do want to ask a question about the bill itself. I think a number of us have expressed concern, and I'm on your bill, by the way, but we have expressed concern about the 50% provision, that at least 50% of grants, would be targeted for non-conventional alternative PrEP programs. And, so what's been happening here is that as we discuss, these bills, we keep circling around to some kind of common purpose that we're expressing. And, so we're talking about shortage areas that we're trying to fill. We're talking about the diversity of our teaching force. And we're also talking about the need to make sure that whatever we're investing is being invested less into programs and much more into assisting individual candidates and teachers. And so one of the things I would have liked to have seen as we continue to evolve, and it's unusual for us to grow and mature and evolve legislation as we're moving it through, would be much more focused language around those common, I think, bipartisan expressions that we had. And instead, we're still doing a 50% set-aside for the non-conventional alternative PrEP programs without expecting them to really prioritize investing the bulk, the majority of those dollars into teacher candidates themselves, in the form of grants, et cetera, as well as an expectation that those programs clearly prioritize meeting shortage areas and meeting the diversity needs that we're trying to invest in with some other bills here. And so it's less a question, I suppose, and more just an expression on my part, and similar to my advice to my good friend Representative Detmer, these questions are going to come up again. They'll certainly come up at some point when this body is meeting the other body to have this conversation. And it certainly has come up in the general public in terms of, so what are you doing here? Are you just investing in programs? Are you actually putting resources into the hands of candidates who are stepping forward so that their needs are met first and foremost before the needs of a program? And so, again, I don't have a question. I'm just sort of doing some collegial counseling here about what I think would be better language in this provision as we move forward.
Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mariani. You are on the bill, and I do appreciate your comments. And I think part of this is to preserve the good traditional pathway to education in the Q, but also to encourage innovation in these non-conventional pathways to teacher licensure as well. For example, the Grow Your Own program, it's a very new program. And those are the type of programs that we do want to encourage. In the Grow Your Own program, the funding goes directly into the hands of the teaching fellows. And so I do appreciate your comments, and thank you, and I hope that there is great innovation that comes of this in our non-conventional pathways to teacher licensures, especially for teachers of diversity. So I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Other comments, questions? All right, seeing none. All in favor of the A34 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, A34 is adopted. See, Representative Mulry, would you like to present your amendments?
Yes, Madam Chair. A29, Madam Chair.
All right, A29. Representative Mulry offers the A29 amendment.
Thank you, Madam.
Representative Mulry, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would have had this earlier, except I just found out about the problem on Tuesday night. I was at a presentation by the Patrick Henry robotics team, who I think has won most of the state championships in recent years, despite the fact they're the most diverse team in the state. And I know they won at the Nationals in St. Louis a few months ago. And the teacher was bringing up the fact that they're having problems because they... This is a fantastic, and I remember speaking with you last year, Madam Chair, about how important it is to get the ability for inner city kids to get into the tech fields. And so what the problem is right now he has open positions for teachers and they can't fill them because at the present time there is no program for a university in the state to issue the certification. The U of M, he says, just closed their program last year, and St. Cloud is in the process of offering or applying to offer a program on that for certification. So what this would do, it's similar to what we're doing on Montessori. It would allow a one-year waiver renewable twice for a person who shows that they have the competency in either work experience in business or industry and who is enrolled in a program getting to that. And then the second part directs the Minsky system to have such a program for certification or licensing in the career and technical education instructor fields. And so, Madam Chair, I think this is a really important area for us. It's all over the state, actually, when the governor's, I don't know if it was a task force, whatever it was, on going around the state and asking businesses what they needed. This was, I believe, the number one thing they asked for. And so it's especially important because I see the how this helps inner city kids that are not going to end up in a 4 or 5 year program in college, and yet they can get into this and get a very decent living in a short time. So I think we need to keep this type of programs going, and this will just keep it going until we can get it back with some university issuing this.
Thank you, Representative Mulry. I've got a couple of people on the list. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mulry, for bringing this forth. This is much needed. And members, I would certainly ask for your support on this amendment because we do need to concentrate on moving in the direction of career and technical education. So both of these sections that are added to our proposal that we're presenting to you today are just vital.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mullery, I'm looking at lines 2.1 and 2.2. The Board of Trustees must locate the first such program in the 7-county metropolitan area. Make me feel a little bit better about that.
Representative Mullery.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Anzels, I know there's nothing that would make you feel better about it unless it was in your hometown, but if you look at the...
Now you heard his feelings.
And, okay. And I'm the next thing I expect from Representative Anzels is about my silk stocking district, which I think most people would not quite call a silk stocking district. So many of the teachers would be needed here. In other words, if it's in the 7-county metro area, I think that the greatest number would be used there and would be also in this program. I actually would, my thought was that, and it wouldn't probably be where you want to go, but probably my second suggestion would be Alexandria Tech is an extremely good technical school, and that would probably be my second thought.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mullery, for your explanation. However, and this has nothing to do with silk stockings or wool stockings. It's just want to be helpful. Would you accept a little friendly word change on line 2.1, changing must to may?
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, Representative Anzels, I don't have a big objection to that.
All right, so Representative Anzels, you want to make that oral amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mullery. I would move then that on line 2.1, the word must be stricken and changed to the word may.
All right, so Representative Anzels does propose that technical change to the amendment, since technically we can't amend an amendment to the amendment, so it'll be a technical change, drafting error.
Very friendly.
And it sounds very friendly.
Very friendly
committee. Well, President Mullery is still smiling, so it appears to be still friendly. All right.
Madam Chair.
So that would be line 2.1, members, the must to a may. And Representative Mullery, I'm sorry, I interrupted you mid-sentence.
Madam Chair, what the Iron Range considers friendly and other things is not always so, but as Representative Rukavina taught me my first week here, but I have no objection to that.
All right. Representative Nornes.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Mullery, the only question I have you had any communication with Minsky in regards to this amendment?
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, it was about 10 minutes that we discussed there in the process of it. Is my understanding. I talked to Jim just for a very short time about it.
Yeah, and I see Mr. Grothwell is here. Would you like to come and provide us with anything Minsky would like to share on this, Representative, or Mr. Grothwell? Please.
Madam Chair, members, Jim Grothwell with Minsky Government Relations. I have a couple colleagues who could speak to the substance of the issue, but it's just we've had a very short time to look at this. I'd like to introduce Carolyn Jargo, Linda Milne, who have, and I'm going to give up my seat to Linda Milne, but it's not the usual and customary manner of selecting and choosing programs by legislative direction. So I'd like to have these two talk a little bit more to the substance of the bill.
Very briefly, please provide your name for the record.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representatives. My name is Linda Milne. I'm Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and I have teacher education as one of my areas of responsibility. I wanted to assure you that in the couple of hours that we've had to take a look at this and think about it, it is legislation that could fit very well with work we've been trying to do ever since the U decided to close its career and tech ed teacher program. This work requires the partnership of three entities, MNSCU, the Board of Teaching, and the Minnesota Department of Education. And if anything, I guess we would say it would be helpful to have legislation to ask us to come together and analyze the state's entire needs when it comes to career and technical education, teacher preparation, because MDE will tell you, and we know, that there are shortages, not only in this area of manufacturing, but in many other career and tech prep areas, and that our K-12 schools are facing a hiring crisis in many cases. What we haven't been able to do is get concise data about where these shortages are, what their extent is, and sit down with our partners, the Board of Teaching and MDE, to agree on priorities. That's where we'd like to place our attentions first and look again throughout the entire state and programs that can be provided by our seven state universities. I'll ask Geraldine also to speak to this.
Madam Chair, Geraldine Jargo, I'm the State Director of Career and Technical Education. And the teacher prep for career and technical is part of what we do. And it has reached a crisis level for several reasons. One is that we're retiring. Another is the popularity of career and technical has somewhat of a cycle. It certainly is not limited to the urban area. It is certainly not limited to the manufacturing, robotics, or electronic. And it also has a different flavor depending on the occupational license. Construction, if I'm going to do construction management or construction technology, for example, the requirements of the teacher have some foundational elements and some very specific occupational ones. We could look at healthcare in a similar way. So what we're asking is, again, as if I can just reinforce what my colleague has said, we need all three parties. We need MDE, the Board of Teaching, and MNSCU to look at where are the priorities, where can we quickly and with quality influence and help move career and technical preparation forward for teachers. So thank you for bringing this as a priority item.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions, or Representative Mullery? Any comment to that?
Madam Chair, I just with the brilliant amendment from Representative Ansells, I think we should go forward with it. It doesn't sound, I haven't seen an objection to, I think as Representative Erickson said, it's an extremely important thing that we have, and I thank the chair for considering it at the late moment, and I wish I'd have had more time, but I didn't know the issue. And I think that we should pass it as is, and the chair is, if you think something should be changed along the way, you change it.
All right. Well, I thank you, Representative Mullery. And we did talk about this. I really appreciate you bringing the amendment to me to discuss yesterday. And as I told you, I happened to have met with a group of superintendents from Region 2 yesterday morning who mentioned the same problem, that there is no place to get certification for their career and technical teachers right now. So I do think this isn't something that needs to be moved forward. All right. Any other questions or comments? All right. So with that, question is on the A29 amendment with that technical change on line 2.1. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. A29 is adopted. All right, Representative Mullery, you're on a roll, so why don't you go with your next amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it would be A33.
All right, the A33 amendment. And Representative Mullery, to your amendment.
And thank you, Madam Chair. As we discussed, I understood that why you didn't include this earlier for hearing, because it was new, completely a new thing this year. And so I will be asking to delete, or moving to delete all of it except lines 2.8 through 2.15. And Madam Chair, this is a really important issue for us in the inner city, where there are a great number of immigrants that come in at an advanced age, where the average, we right now at, for instance, at Patrick Henry and some other schools in the city, we have a program under that new, the middle college program that was set up in 2014, I believe. We have quite a few kids in that program that come in at age 18 that are English language learners because they've just come here. There are, I believe, something like four programs around the state, but there's one at MCTC that we know of, and it's in collaboration with Robbinsdale, Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, Mounds View, and Metro Heights Academy in coordination with MCTC. And it's where they're in the school part of the day, and then they're at MCTC part of the day. And Minneapolis actually has had such success with this. They've got an actual full-time counselor on campus just for these. They're called D3 students. And what we're trying, there are students that are behind, but we're on around the state that and in the Minneapolis system, and includes a lot of others. But what we're targeting here is just the English language learners, because they can do well in the program, but they have, when they come here when they're 17 or 18 years old to this country, obviously that's a huge challenge all of a sudden, and they can't catch up in just a couple of years, which is the present system. So the purpose of this is to extend it to age 24 for just the English language learners. And because of that would cost money and throw your budget off, that's why I'm deleting everything except lines 2.8 to 2.15. And so what remains is just that the commissioner make a report on these dual credit programs for middle college programs and the number of actual English learners participating in these, so that we know exactly how many we would be applying this to if next year we fund it. And the commissioner would also be asked to recommend how to expand participation in this for more English learning language, English language learners around the state. Sorry. And so that's the purpose of it, Madam Chair. And so I'll make that motion to delete.
Actually, Representative Mulry, because it's an amendment to the amendment, there's Chair.
Can it be a technical?
Council's telling us how to do this. So so if I, Representative Mulry, I believe what you're wanting to do is to divide the amendment between lines 2.7 and 2.8, and then and withdraw the first part. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So Representative Mulry moves to divide the amendment between 2.7 and 2.8, between those two lines, and withdraw the first part of the amendment. And then you would like to divide the amendment between 2.15, lines 2.15 and 2.16, and withdraw the bottom part, correct?
Madam Chair, I don't know how you read my thoughts so well.
I have good coaching. All right, so Representative Mulry has withdrawn the first part, lines 2.7 and above, and he has also divided the amendment between 2.15 and 2.16 and withdrawn the portion from 2.16 down to 2.2. So what is remains are lines 2.9 to 2.15, as he has just described the report. Looks like everybody's following me. Oh, I'm sorry, 2.8 to 2.15. Thank you. All right, so Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will support them what's before us. But I do want to just very quickly state for the record that what Representative Mullery had in its entirety here actually involved several issues. And one of the issues that involved our English language learners who have interrupted formal education as identified under 124D.59. That element was part of the Minnesota LEAPS Act that this body passed 2 years ago and that I had the privilege to author. They're otherwise known as SLIFE students. I do have a bill this year specifically on SLIFE. Didn't get a hearing in this committee on it. It would have cost, for sure, some money. And, you know, we'll continue to have this conversation about SLIFE through the rest of this legislative session and no doubt into the coming years. Part of what's happening, members, is that while these students are EL students, they're really in a category all to themselves. And that has to do with the fact that there are students who come into the nation with very little, if any, formal education as part of their experience. And they do tend to come in a little bit older, which means they are going to run out the clock under our K-12 financing scheme, which has the cap off at 21. And yet, it's vitally important that we provide the kind of educational opportunities for these students who will eventually become U.S. citizens, who will be part of our society, and we want them to be well-educated. The challenges are pretty tremendous. We're talking about students, in some cases, who have never seen a book, who have never held a pen, who have never had interaction with a licensed teacher. No structure, in many cases, as they're families are trying to survive, genocide and war and oppression in deserts and jungles, you know, around the world. And we do know that there are some good emerging practices and working effectively with these students that could pretty rapidly get them to where we need to get them. But it's going to take, even those good practices are going to take more time than what we have, where they're going to time out just because they're going to age out. And so I do want us, Madam Chair, and this legislature to increasingly wrap our minds around how do we adjust and redesign our school systems in terms of practice, but also in terms of how we finance them so that we can meet the reality of these students on the ground. It will be a good investment if we do that. These are folks that are going to be Minnesotans for decades to come. And we want them to be Minnesotans who, at the very least have a high school diploma, if not more. And so I thank you, Representative Mullery, for highlighting this issue. It's a little bit different than what we're going to be voting on, but I hope that in the near future we'll have a deeper conversation about SLIFE students.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Questions? All right, to Representative Mullery's amendment, and again, lines 2.8 to 2.15 is what we're voting on from the original A33 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, A33 is adopted. Representative Hertas, you have an amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A8 amendment.
All right, Representative Hertas moves the A8 amendment. Two-year amendment, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The A8 amendment deals with the achievement and integration funding for our school districts. And the purpose of the integration funding was to pursue racial and economic integration, to increase student academic achievement, and to create equitable educational opportunities, and by reducing the disparities based on the diverse racial, ethnic, and economic backgrounds. More than a decade ago, this program was initiated to basically integrate some of the racially isolated school districts, and the districts adjoining them were in many respects mandated to participate in these programs. The touch districts, as they're referred to, basically developed programs, and the taxpayers funded and bonded for additional space, and there was a great deal of time and money and energy spent in staff development and recruiting staff, and had programs that were working and providing real opportunities and real change for students of color and minorities, and basically improving their conditions. Recently, you may recall that the department issued a rule change, and this went through administrative hearings, and the administrative law judge ruled on this matter. They also issued kind of a stunning rebuke about the rule change, and that it had crossed the line in terms of legislating. And school districts in particular that were being affected by this were very concerned about having no soft landing in this circumstance, and basically putting them, in some cases, even into statutory operating debt for not qualifying for the funding that they had worked for a number of years to develop these programs. So what the A8 amendment does is it codifies in statute the definition of an integration district. And that's pretty much what it does. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Representative Hertaus, you approached me about this a while back, and we had a brief conversation about it. I appreciate your outreach to it. Part of me actually really likes this. And the reason I do is because it seems to me that more districts that have skin in the game in terms of racial integration efforts in our state, the better. There are, however, some challenges that you'll be facing with this language, Representative Hertaus. One is that currently, right now, in order under the rule for those touch districts to participate, they have to be part of a collaboration that submits a plan. So they're submitting a plan, you know, with those districts that they're touching. This language is going to require, several dozen other districts that are not currently part of those collaboratives to participate. And as I said, the more that participate, in my book, the better. But we need to be really open-eyed about what this does, you know. And one of the things that it does is that, so there's a new requirement on 30-something new school districts. Most of them are going to be in Greater Minnesota. And they're going to receive, if they're in, they're going to wind up receiving pretty little funding, just because of the formula, the way it works out. And yet they're going to have to go through all that work, you know, of putting together those plans. So there could be some real issues there in terms of what might be, I hate to say this, but kind of a return on investment, of their efforts. The department has looked at this, and I suspect that this goes on. We'll be looking at a fiscal note down the line. They're looking at somewhere around $3.5 million for a fiscal note, for this. I like pushing forward. I like engaging, absolutely. I'm just kind of laying the stuff out, in terms of what some of the challenges are going to be here. You may want to spend some time, maybe you already have, but you may want to spend some time talking with all sorts of school districts out there who may not want to be a part of this, but are now being pulled into it as a result of this language. So again, Madam Chair, I'm kind of in a theme here today where I'm kind of less asking questions and trying to offer some collegial advice as we move forward with some of these ideas.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Did you want to comment, Representative Hertas? Or you're mentioning of potential fiscal implications. I just wanted to ask nonpartisan staff to comment on that.
Madam Chair, the issue here, I think, involves just the rearrangement of the language for the current voluntary districts that participate. That was done in statute. The rule language, which is what Representative Hertas is codifying, did not address the issue of the voluntary members. And so the place, the location of that in statute has changed, but not the intent. So there shouldn't be any additional costs. It should be the same groups that are currently qualifying that would continue to do so.
Thank you. Mr. Strom. Other Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did want to mention that in the course of this getting a little bit better, there was a couple of metro districts in the Northeast that are part of the collaborative that did not technically touch the isolated district, and that the language at 2.21 addresses that issue and allows those programs that were already established to continue to operate as long as they file a plan with the commissioner.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hertas. All right. I just want to make sure that Mr. Strom could communicate whatever he was to you. All right. All right. Any other questions or comments from committee members on the A8 amendment? Right. Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. A8 is adopted. Representative Marquardt, would you like to do your amendment, maybe A22 amendment?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'll move the A22 amendment. And members, what that does is restore some funding for the regional centers of excellence. And we are in a new era of high stakes for education when it comes to terms of accountability and data and results. And with the world's best workforce, we have upped that, we've raised the bar where school districts have goals they have to strive for, they have to present the data, they have to get to the results, and it's a very transparent process. So as we do this, you know, part of this accountability is you have focus schools and you have priority schools. And the focus schools are those schools that are on the bottom 10% of closing the achievement gap. And then you have the priority schools, which are on the bottom 5% of achievement. And so then we need some school improvement plans. We need to work with those school districts. And those groups and those folks who have been working with these school districts are these regional centers of excellence. And there are six around the state, all in rural Minnesota, and they serve as advocates and coaches. And so you've got accountability and you have support. And the results have been very, very good. In, I think, 2012, 2013 was the first year these regional centers of excellence were working with our schools. There were 63 focus and priority schools, and within 1 year, 23 came off that list. They've gone out and done surveys of the school districts that they have worked with. 90 to 95% very satisfied with the work that they are doing. And so, you know, we're asking these districts to reach these high standards, and if they don't, then the state will come in and even redirect, you know, that 2%. We need those coaches out there. We need these advocates out there working with our school districts that can provide specialists and so forth. And as just kind of a rural, representing rural school districts, why should we have to go to the metro area or work with somebody out of the metro area when we have regional centers right now in our communities out in rural Minnesota that we have to work with? And by eliminating the funding for these regional centers of excellence, where they're in Thief River Falls, they're in Mountain Iron, they're in Fergus Falls, they're in St. Cloud, they're in Marshall, and they're in Rochester. They're out in rural Minnesota. They're helping our rural Minnesota schools. And so I really think if we're really serious about closing the achievement gap and getting results, this is a tool that is working. And it's helping rural Minnesota schools and schools throughout the state, but they're out there. And so we don't have to travel far distances to get some help. So as this bill moves forward, Madam Chair, I'm hoping you relook at these regional centers of excellence. They really do work, and they're going to be really, really important as we try to reach these high accountability levels. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm going to withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And I appreciate your comments. Thank you for withdrawing. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair.
You want to start with your amendments? I have A20 and A24.
Madam Chair, why don't we do numerical order? I'll move the A20 amendment to be before the committee.
Very good. Representative Dabney offers the A20 amendment to your amendment. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this language would amend the text in the bill regarding capping of the pathway to early childhood scholarships. What we know when we established the Early Childhood Scholarship Program a few years ago, there were a couple of touch points that were key policy provisions. One of them was parent choice. Parents get to decide what sort of a provider they want to send their child to. The language in the bill moves us away from parental choice by capping the funding of the Pathway to Scholarships. I think we should stay with the original policy goals of the program and allow parents the greatest choice that they wish. I think it's also important, you know, my colleague and friend Representative Marquardt was just talking about the needs of Greater Minnesota. In Greater Minnesota, the Pathway to Scholarships are the largest single provider of early childhood care in the area. So Greater Minnesota parents choose Head Starts and public school programs over other programs. I think they should be allowed to do that if that's where they find quality, if that's where they find convenience, if that's where they find a program that works for their child. And in order to do that, we shouldn't be artificially capping the funding. We should continue to fund the program, but allow parents to drive the decision making. With that, Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you. Oh, did you want to talk about the other part of the amendment?
The change.
Oh, okay.
You mean state?
The 2020-16.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. That would just continue this funding at this time.
All right. Representative Dabney's amendment. Any comments or discussion? You know, Representative Dabney, we've had some debate upon this, and we've had testimony in the early childhood. I can't agree to your amendment, and I feel very strongly about a couple of things. One is that the parent choice element, which you have talked about, and certainly we have, through the language of the bill, it would cap Pathway 2 at its current level, so it doesn't impact the program currently, but if more money is added to the program, it would flow into Pathway 1. And just to point out that there's nothing that prohibits programs currently receiving Pathway 2 from receiving parents and their child on a Pathway 1 scholarship. In fact, I think something like 30% of the Pathway 1 scholarships currently are being used at a program that also has Pathway 2 funding for it. And with regards to the other, the requirement on the 3- and 4-star rated program, currently at 2016, you know, we've heard ample testimony and concerns, especially from rural areas where Parent Aware was only rolled out to certain parts of our state in 2015. Now, in parts of the state that were maybe part of the pilot program in some of the suburban areas and other selected rural areas, they're much more familiar with Parent Aware. But in some of the areas of our state, it's going to take longer to get providers into the Parent Aware rating system and even come in maybe as a 1-star and then move up. And I think in order to build capacity,
for families, giving a little more time to get more of those parent-aware 3 and 4 rated star-rated programs. We need to push this date out to allow that to happen. So, unfortunately, I'm going to impose your amendment. Other comments? Representative Nornes?
Madam Chair, I was just going to concur with your comments that I'm hearing from my area of the state, and if that date isn't changed, it's very detrimental to the very short supply of child care that we already have. So it just makes it much worse. So I agree that this amendment is not something we want to pass.
Other comments? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of the A20 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
All right, amendment does not pass. And Representative Dabney, A24?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A24 amendment to be before the committee. Madam Chair, I'm hoping since the Colonel, the seed of this amendment came from one of your testifiers last week, that I'll get a little bit, a little bit more out of you on this one than I did on the previous one. Members, the issues of school safety have been much in the media recently. In the bill, there's a language that gives one approach. Last week, testifiers talked about the importance of all teachers being involved in conversations about having safe classrooms, having learning environments that were conducive to learning, and of course those are also the working environments for the teachers. The challenge with the language in the bill as it is that concerns me is it would allow the teacher in room 101 to handle discipline one way, and the teacher in room 102 to handle it a different way, and the teacher in room 215 to handle it a third way. I don't think that builds a coherent culture and climate in the school. So this would allow, it's permissive, would allow exclusive reps and school districts to sit down and negotiate issues around school climate and student and staff safety at the negotiating table. It affirms the professionalism of our teachers, whose voices should be heard and should be included in these conversations, while also providing a stable and consistent climate around discipline for students. With that, Madam Chair, I would ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And I do like part of your amendment. So I'm going to move to divide the amendment between lines 1.3 and 1.4. And I would move to adopt the second part, so lines 1.4 through the 1.11.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that.
So should we
Madam Chair, I will withdraw the first portion of the amendment that,
all right,
in that case.
So Representative Dabney withdraws the first part of the amendment. And so now the question is on the amendment lines 1.4 through 1.11. All right, so everyone tracking that okay? All right, so any other comments?
And you accept the 1.4 to...
Yes, I do accept the 1.4 through 1.11. All right. All right. Then all in favor of A24, the section that remains, 1.4 and beyond, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Representative Erickson.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the A32 amendment.
All right. Representative Erickson moves the A32 amendment. And Representative Erickson, to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I feel like James Madison right now because, as you know, when he worked his way through the Constitution, he had to do a little turnabout. So here I am coming to you on behalf of Representative Erdahl to present the civics test. This is not a graduation requirement. It allows our students to know more about citizenship. and the Constitution. In fact, according to our social studies standards, the civics division, that can be accomplished by the seventh grade. And in this amendment, you notice that students can take this test that would be embedded in the social studies standards as early as seventh grade. It is, about all I want to say at this time, but I certainly would stand for questions.
All right. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Mariani.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, I did have a conversation with Representative Erbaugh earlier this morning about this, but I just want to ask a couple questions to be clear about the language itself. So, is there a high school graduation requirement embedded in this language?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, no.
And then, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, how does the test component work? Is there going to be a separate test, or is there going to be an effort to incorporate these questions within existing tests? What would be our expectation of schools in terms of administering this expectation?
Madam Chair and members, if you check line 1.11, you will notice that the Learning Law and Democracy Foundation, in consultation with our civics teachers, our social studies teachers, would select by July 1 each year 50 of the 100 questions to serve as the state civics test questions for the approximate school year, and immediately transmit those to the department and to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which then would post the 50 questions on our legacy website. So to the extent that locals have control, I think they would determine then how they want to use this test, whether they give it as I proposed in another proposal that's included here on Constitution Day, or if they embed it with their study of the Constitution at whatever level they decide they want to give this test. And students, of course, with disabilities are exempt if their IEP determines that it's not appropriate for them to take this. And it may be given as well in other languages than English.
Representative Mariani.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson.
She did. It's 272.
When I spoke with Representative Erdahl earlier today, it was his, what he expressed to me is that one of his desires was to back out of, so I want to go back to that first question, was to back out of the idea, the proposal that we have a high school graduation requirement here. That, high school graduation requirements are often a big stumbling block, as Representative Bedford well knows from many efforts at the FIED requirements. But I want us to look at the language on page 2, on lines 2.7 through 2.10, which I think applies. It's kind of interesting because, you know, typically we will, Madam Chair, we'll build in language into high school requirement sections, if you will, or graduation requirement sections. But this one does kind of a weird thing where on line 2.10, it says the principal will allow the student to graduate and receive a diploma. That has to do with waiving the requirement that they answer 30 or 50 civics tests questions correctly. I don't know if there's no high school requirement here, as Representative Erdahl has shared with me and as Representative Erickson just did, why we would need language that says and allow the student to graduate and receive a diploma. So it seems to me, Representative Erickson, that consistent with what you shared and what Representative Erdahl shared with you, we ought to strike that language out of here.
Madam Chair
Erickson.
And Representative Mariani, yes, Representative Erdahl was a bit alarmed to realize that that language was still in and wanted me to delete it, but I don't believe that this is the place because it's more than a technical amendment. So unless the chair would disagree, because I certainly agree with you. But it was just something that was brought to my attention moments before we convened. So I told Representative Erdahl that I didn't think it would be allowable. That, of course, is up to the chair.
I have had discussions, and I'll call on you in just one second, Representative Murphy, with Representative Erdahl about this. And at one point, it's viewed to be just some extraneous comfort language to assure those who are concerned that we were inserting a new graduation requirement that was not the case. But I understand the point that you're raising, Representative Mariani. Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, just advice. I do think it could be a technical amendment.
Thank you, Representative Murphy.
And so if we were to make a technical correction, what would that be?
Madam Chair and members, on line 2.10, we would strike and allow the student to graduate and receive a diploma and insert and move that period after correctly. So insert the period that we're not deleting. So again, strike and allow the students to graduate and receive a diploma.
Right, so perhaps that drafting error could be corrected.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
I think I understand Chair Erickson's amendment to correct technical amendment, but then I do not understand the presence of lines 2.7 to 2.10 to the period that is just there.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I'm struggling too.
And Madam Chair, she's struggling more than I am because I was a social studies teacher, so I got not an English teacher. But
good. All right, so I've got people on the list, and I'm sorry, I have hopped around here. I'm going to go back in order of calling on them. Representative Ansels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very uncomfortable with this amendment. I understand the outcome that people are looking for and all of that. I just think that what classroom teachers need, what classroom teachers don't need is more another block of instructional time being consumed with test taking. What classroom teachers need, especially civics teachers, is time to teach. And this is a mandate whose concept needs further work, and I would urge a no vote.
All right. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my only thing is, if we're correcting the part about requiring a graduation, then on 1.20, 1.21, it says a school or district must record on a student's transcript whether or when the student answered the question. So you may need some correction there, too, because when I talked with Representative Erdahl, he also said this would not be a requirement for graduation. I know that was your intent also, Representative Erickson. Otherwise, I do have concerns if it isn't. I teach social studies, but the one concern I had is that somehow, because you passed this test, would somehow indicate you're a good citizen. And just because I know the rules in the baseball book doesn't make me a good baseball player.
That's right, that's for sure.
And so to me, citizenship and civics is not a pencil and paper test. It's being active, being involved, you know, going out to vote, being part of your community, volunteering. That's what makes a good citizen. And so I think this is very limiting. And so, I mean, with all the other stuff out, I can support that if it doesn't have the requirements. To do a test is fine, but to somehow have this as kind of, you're a good citizen now because you passed this test, I think that might be a bit confusing for folks. So, anyway, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the passion behind this part of the bill. I had a question. Maybe Representative Erickson can answer this. If a student can begin taking this test in seventh grade, does he have 6 years to finish the test?
Representative
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, yes. In fact, the questions, remember, are posted, and so, you know, there is ample opportunity to answer them correctly, I guess I'd say. But in defense of Representative Erdahl, I think you all know his passion for this, and he does not serve on this committee. And I had the Erdahl light earlier and the Erdahl heavier now. So, you know, I respect his passion, and that's why I offer this.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, the original bill had a fiscal note to it. Does this bill have, does this amendment have the fiscal note?
Madam Chair, I can answer that.
Representative
Erickson. You know, if it does, Representative Murphy, it comes out of the legacy fund.
Representative Erdahl is very passionate about it.
I'm sure he is, Madam Chair. I don't see on here where it says the money will come out of the legacy fund, and I don't think it's on the agenda. Your bill is on the agenda for the legacy committee, but
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I am joking, but Representative Erdahl has been, I think, over the years trying to make legacy and education come together in a more educational way or a benefit to our students. So I say that in jest, of course, but I think he's been attempting to make legacy and our educational system align better, if I may say it that way. So,
thank you.
I didn't mean to provide any confusion or misstatements here.
I think you're right, Representative.
He did leave the room, as you noticed. So, I'm defending without his being behind me.
Well, and members, again, I've had conversations with Representative Erdahl. His earliest version of this bill did trigger a fiscal note because he had it crafted as a graduation requirement. But in taking that out and not requiring either the department to create a test or making this a graduation requirement, I don't believe there's any fiscal cost to it. We can certainly seek a revised note, and if that is the case in Ways and Means, I can assure you the Ways and Means Chair is pretty serious about making us account for that. So, I don't know if fiscal staff can offer any other guidance on this as well. Ms. Johnson.
Madam Chair, the fiscal note, the revised language has a fiscal note request on it, but it has not been turned, but it seems to be close.
Okay. So. All right. So we're awaiting that.
And Madam Chair, could we consider eliminating sentences 2.4 to 2.10 as a technical amendment? Mm-hmm. I
don't think so, Representative Murphy. Representative Gaffney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hate to get practical. I think it's against the rules of the House, but how does this actually, given we've got a kid's got 6 years to do this, and the questions change every year under subdivision 3.16 to 1.16, so I've got 6 years, but every year it's a different set of questions. It's one thing if I stay in the same school, some of the smaller rural schools where there's 7-12 schools, or maybe even a 6-12 or a 5-12 school, depending on the district. I get that because then Jimmy's got a file somewhere. But if I move around the state, even around a district, but particularly around a state, and I end up in 2 or 3 or 4 different schools between 7th grade and 12th grade, maybe I go from a traditional public to a charter and then back. Maybe I go from maybe I miss a couple of years of the testing because I'm in a private school, and then I go to a school that I wasn't in previously. How do they track which of which year's 50 questions I've correctly answered? Because as I understand from Representative Erdahl, the whole idea is I get the 50 questions, I pass correctly, I answer correctly how many I do, and then I don't, and then I have to keep going at it until I've hit, you know, the magic number. So how does the tracking of this student in data work, and what are the safe, what are the security parameters around that to ensure students' privacy?
Thank you. And I'm going to, if Mr. Strom or Ms. Larson, whoever's, if, just confirm this, but in my reading of it, if a student has passed, so they've answered 30 of 50 correctly, that will be noted on their transcript. So a student that would be moving, presumably their transcript will follow them to the next school, and if they pass, that'll be noted on their transcript. If it's not noted on the transcript, presumably they did not pass.
Representative
Murphy?
I'll defer.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I think the students would get a permanent copy of the student's first 50 questions, and then that student would be responsible until they complete the 30 of the 50 questions correctly every year that they take the questions, but they would still have the first 50 questions to answer.
Representative
Dabney. Mentor, do I get a pocket copy of the Constitution as well? What I mean, it's just the questions change every year, and so if I answered 10 correctly, how do they communicate from one school district to another or one school to another? Jim answered questions 3, 17, 18, 22, 9 correctly on this year's test, and the next year it's a different test, and I've got to get up to 30, but I've got 6 years to do it, and I just don't understand how we track this on a practical level. Maybe Ms. Representative Murphy needs to explain it to me again more slowly.
Chair, Representative Dabney, it would be in their permanent file, and the student would know what the 50 questions are that they have, and they have that 50, and then the school could give them a certificate of achievement when they've got 30 out of the 50, whichever school it is.
All right. Thank you.
It just goes along with all the other things that we've done here. Permanent files, data privacy, student has to grow at their own pace, and a certificate.
All right, Representative Murray, and members, I know that so we can stay in the room until 3. The next commitment in this room has been pushed back till 3:15. I'm looking to see if members, do the DFL members need to leave now? For caucus. All right, so I'm going to continue on until 3. I'm not sure if we'll be able to finish, but we'll see if we can get a little farther. Representative Mariani.
I'll be very quick. We have a bill before us that doesn't reflect the intention of the author of the original bill or the maker of the motion. It does seem to me that this amendment ought to be pulled, and there are other opportunities to get the correct amendment, the correct language, further down the line. Obviously, we can move it forward, but I certainly don't want to be voting for a brand new high school graduation requirement. I'm not sure that other members around the room want to do that as well, but that's what we'll be doing, I'm afraid, if we move the silence at this point. So my counsel would be full language, bring it back, have another committee stop. There seems to be interest, I think, around the table for something in this area. My advice.
All right, and Representative Mariani, I appreciate your comments, but I just want to assure you that this language, because I have reviewed it carefully, I've discussed it with Representative Erdahl, this chair would not accept an amendment that is a new graduation requirement. So And the language that we perhaps are making a technical drafting correction to that references allowing the student to graduate and receive a diploma that was errantly added here, it's to reflect the fact that it is not a graduation requirement.
So, Madam Chair, just to be clear, so that on line 2.10 right now, the motion before us does not include the language after the word correct.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, and for perhaps members did not hear that, so because of technically we're not supposed to amend an amendment, so I'm suggesting that there was a drafting error and that the set line 2.10 should end with a period after the word correctly.
Okay.
Right. So if that helps clarify for members.
Yeah, where's Dean? Only up to the copies of
All right. Other questions, comments? Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, I certainly appreciate your focus on not making it a graduation requirement, but we still have the language on 1.7 to 1.8, which, again, if you are pursuing a diploma, you must do this. Actually, I think it goes down to 1.19, apologies. So the language continues to imply, at a minimum, that this is a graduation requirement. Because if I'm trying to get to across the line on June 2nd, I have to fulfill this.
The way it's written.
117 to
119. Yes. Representative Newton.
2.8. Representative Dabney, it's because it's or. I believe it's one circumstance or another.
Madam Chair, I agree. It applies whether I'm going for a conventional high school diploma or a GED. But in both cases, it's a requirement that I do this.
Correct.
Which makes this a graduation requirement. Because if I want either of those documents, I have to do this.
Well, Representative Dabney, but if you continue reading on to the next page, it's a requirement that you take the test. It requires what you have, how many questions you answer correctly to achieve a passing score.
And may wait.
Then 2.8. If you have not correctly answered, the principal or person having administrative control of the school may waive the requirement to answer 30 or 50 civics questions correctly.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Then on 2.9, I would point out the word may. So again, then we have a local administrator who can make this a graduation requirement. because I have to take this. If I'm not making it, my principal may waive it.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I think that it's obvious that we're going to have to come back after session.
I believe you're right.
So therefore, I think we should waive the penalty or that amendments have to be in.
The pre-filing requirement on this one?
Correct. And work on this language with Representative Erdahl during session and come back with a corrective thing so we don't have to spend any more time here on this one at this particular time, and we could have a clean version of the intent of a good citizen.
I think that's an excellent suggestion, Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I would move to lay this over so we can work further on it until we reconvene after session.
Very good. So Representative Erickson moves to lay over the A32 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Could I move that Representative Erdahl has to buy us all cheeseburgers for dinner when we convene?
Please do.
How about a steak dinner?
All right, so I will waive the amendment deadline for the A32 amendment for perhaps a resubmission. And with that, I think since we're at a breaking point, we'll just we'll stop or recess committee at this point. We will reconvene after session, and I will make an announcement on the floor about the specific time. But the room that we have reserved is room 10. So just so members know, that's where we will be. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, since we're going to recess right away, I thought we still would have time for a couple more amendments. But could we also, could you also perhaps speak with Representative Detmer and make a few of us more comfortable with the language that Representative Detmer successfully passed in this committee to strengthen this bill?
Representative Murphy, I'd be happy to speak with Representative Detmer about that. I mean, since we've already adopted that amendment, I'm reticent to open that up, at least for committee at this point. But I will speak to him about it, and as I said, I think he's certainly willing to continue discussing language on that provision as the bill, as this entire bill moves forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? And we will just go ahead and break now since we're kind of at that point. And we will see you back after session. I'll make an announcement on the specific time. You just note that it's room 10. All right, the committee is in recess. All right, the Committee on Education Finance is reconvened. All right, so members, I think we will now go back to some of the rest of the amendments that have been filed, and then we'll finish up with the revised version of the one we were on and set aside, the 32-1, the civics discussion. So A32 was withdrawn or laid over. Oh, and now it's withdrawn. So A32 is withdrawn, and per our previous discussion, the A32-1 should be in your packets, but we're going to take that up last. So... All right. Oh, it needs to be handed out? Okay. So if the pages can hand that out, it's just so people have a chance to look at it. But in the meantime, we're going to go to Representative Mariani with, we'll just go a numerical order of the ones you file, A5. So if members can find A5, and if you need copies in the transition, if you don't have them, just raise your hands and the pages will get one for you.
Madam Chair, I would
move
adoption of the A5 amendment.
Very good. Representative Mariani moves to A5 amendment, and you are recognized to your amendment.
Madam Chair, members, so this involves the Purpose Center for the Arts, and we heard quite a bit of testimony, some of it a little bit heart-wrenching, that testimony from parents and teachers and a few other stakeholders, so I'm not going to repeat any of that. One of the issues that this amendment attempts to address really is the governance issue, the administration of the school. And what I heard was that there were some real deep trust issues that currently exist that have to do with issues of transparency and access to knowledge, or rather access to board members. And my understanding is that there is now an email system that's been set up so that people can have, you know, be able to email folks on the board. But apparently the trust level, unfortunately, is not where it should be you know, for a board that's running a school. Now, so what this amendment would do is basically walk into and establish a different governance structure that does a few things. One is it lowers the number of board members from 15 to 13. It then identifies categories of people to be on the board, school, someone from who served as a school administrator or an elected school board member, professional artist, a professional secondary or post-secondary arts teacher, licensed secondary arts teacher, licensed secondary teacher teaching a core academic subject area. And then there's a seven-member nominating committee that will be then constructed from different broad stakeholder groups to be able to move forward with the nomination of individuals. And, of course, all these will be eventually appointed by the governor, so that isn't changed. And the seven-member nominating committee involves the Minnesota Association of Board Administrators, State Arts Board, School Boards, Music Educators Association, Arts Educators, and an exclusive representative of the employees of the Purpose Center for the Arts. Members, I know that one of the, and this is one of the questions I asked, that one of the issues is, or rejoiners would be, but Representative Mariani, the Office of Legislative Auditor is going to conduct an audit here. Why don't we wait until then? And I would say normally that's a good thing to do, but here's the issue. We have a school that's being governed right now and will continue to be governed for the course of at least a year before we hear back from the Legislative Auditor. And then we have to act if there are, you know, recommendations, you know, in terms of governance. And so we're talking about children. We're talking about minors, talking about an environment of professional lack of trust. I think we can step in pretty quickly here and provide an accessible board of professionals, and we can still address the long-term governance issues if, in fact, those come forward from the legislative auditor. Representative Ward has worked on this amendment. She's been in touch with the stakeholders that I mentioned, and they are willing and ready to step forward and provide some leadership here. So, Madam Chair, with that, I urge support for the amendment.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Creech had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mariani, just a couple of questions, just so I understand some things. And I know back when you were the chair of the ed policy, we were down at the Crosswind School for one of our meetings. So we've been working on this for a while. Just two things, and I see it exactly the same way. There's a trust issue. Yeah. Will this fix that trust issue? I mean, are we going to – I mean, what if a year from now it's new people with just new trust issues? Is it going to fix the school's outcomes and where they're headed?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, Representative Creech, of course – I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't answer that with certainty. But I think what Representative Ward did was to call on some of the very same stakeholder groups that we call on mm-hmm. on a regular basis to help us manage in other areas of K-12, but also to advise us in policy work. And so this, I would say that this is a list of high-quality associations that are going to put forward, bless you, some high-quality candidates. And I would reiterate that apparently the situation currently is degenerated so that we know, we've been told, that the trust issue with the current group is just not there.
Representative Creech.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for that. And so then the last thing.
All right.
as promised.
You know what, Madam Chair? No further questions.
We want to hurry and get to Representative Earl's amendment before the goodwill runs out.
I wanted a quarter pound.
Maybe I can take all my amendments in one vote here.
All right. Any other questions for Representative Mariani or comments on the A5 amendment? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. A5 amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Mariani, A10.
Madam Chair, I would move adoption of the A10 amendment.
All right. Representative Mariani moves the A10 amendment. Representative Mariani, two-year amendment.
Here it is. Madam Chair, members, so this is, there's several repealers on page 69, and one of them involves repealing language of the Principals Academy. I was going to call former Representative Seegren to come forward and see if she wanted to offer testimony on this. This was actually one of her creatures a decade ago, and quite frankly, it was an academy that enjoyed pretty wide bipartisan support. Both your predecessor, Representative Greiling, always made sure that we properly funded and took care. Properly funded the academy and lifted up the value of us investing in principal leadership development in the state. We didn't have enough time during the course of the year to really talk this through. I should have been paying more attention. You know, repealers always have a habit of sneaking up on me. But I do think that, and I know that there's a little bit of clunky language that's in statute right now in regards to this. But I do think it's important for us to keep in our state statutes an expectation that we would require the kind of level, the high level of preparation and skill development of principals to be effective leaders in our schools. They're at a critically important point of the system. I would argue more important than the superintendents and even school board members. They're the ones who day in and day out are managing issues that have everything to do with outcomes of our schools. So Madam Chair, I would say, perhaps there's clunky language here that we might want to fix at some point. I know we're doing an appropriation from last year in one of the academies, but I would urge us to keep the language in. We can come back and see if there's a better way for us to structure those and perhaps even have higher expectations of what they do and properly preparing principals. Madam Chair, that's my amendment, and look for your support.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Any other comments or questions? Representative Mariani, I appreciate your thoughts and your comments that you share with the committee, and I do think, the language is clunky. I don't particularly like the way it is in the statute. We did provide money for the academy to the University of Minnesota, and I think principal training is one of the more important things we need to do for improving our schools and closing the achievement gap. I firmly believe that that starts with building leadership, and it is incredibly important. However, I would prefer if we would not pass your amendment, clean up the statute, and happy to look to proposals coming before the committee on expanding what we're doing in principal leadership academies. I'd like to hear that and have the committee have a voice in that with those appropriations. And so, that's how I'd like to approach this. Any other comments? Questions? All right, seeing none, all in favor of the A10 amendment? Oh, Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, on that point, we're funding one of the principal academy, right? But not the other?
Correct.
So, Madam Chair, I appreciate that,
that you want more study, but why don't we have more input then on both of them rather than funding one with confidence and the other one no? Because what I remember from last year was the success of the Mankato project more than what I remember about the University of Minnesota project. And I don't know why we're picking the one and not the other.
Well, Representative Murphy, I'll call on nonpartisan staff if I'm stating this incorrectly, but the language provides discretion to the commissioner to establish a principal academy at the U or the Minsku and at sort of with under her authority. And we did hear proposals from both the U and from Mankato as part of the Minsku system. We did end up directly funding the one to the U. And again, I have no objection to hearing proposals for funding specific projects and that. But I would like those proposals to come before this committee to be heard, to hear their merits, rather than leaving it to the discretion of the commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? All right. With that, all in favor of the A10 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
All right. Amendment is not adopted. Representative Mariani, you and I talked about your A13-1 amendment, and I don't know if you wanted to say something about it, but if you want to offer it, just note for the committee that you and I have had a discussion. There are elements to this amendment that I do like and favor, and others I'd like to work with you on a bit. So I'll let you talk about it, but just for the committee's knowledge in that, it would be something I'd be willing to work with you on, perhaps for a floor amendment. So,
Madam Chair,
Mariani.
So Madam Chair, just to have it before us, I will move the 13-1 amendment. So, Madam Chair, the 13-1 amendment is actually my House file on teachers of color. And it's really pretty...
13-1, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Madam Chair, that's correct, 13-1.
Yeah.
And it's really quite simple. We've got several bills before us where we're investing in teachers, in enhancing the teacher flow into our state, including teachers of color, diversifying our teaching core, as well as addressing shortage areas in over and above our low numbers of teachers of color. And by now, you probably it's probably all ingrained into our heads. You know, we're talking about the student population, close to 30% kids of color, with a teaching core that's hovering between 3% and 4% and has hovered between 3% and 4% for the past 30 years. And we're about to make some investments, particularly in the upfront part of addressing teacher supply and teacher presence issues, really looking heavily at the first steps of the pipeline in terms of recruiting and prepping, a little bit of an induction. But what we're not doing is we're not developing the policy frame to accompany that investment. And members, right now we're doing one-time appropriations in terms of those new investments. So at this point, I don't know whether we're going to be able to sustain those or even grow those into the next year, but it's not the expectation of any of the bills before us that we're going to do. What we can do, however, to complement that good effort that's happening from both sides of the aisle, is to offer some pretty simple basic policy expectations of our system. And as you recall, when I presented the bill at first, you know, I dove right into the heart and core of the world's best workforce, essentially setting it up as a sixth goal for our accountability system for our schools to really be serious about creating more diverse teachers in their schools. I heard from plenty of members from both sides of the aisle, including Chair Marquardt, concerned about embedding that into the goals section of World's Best Workforce. And so the language before you doesn't do that. It backs up out of that. But it does continue to set up within the World's Best Workforce frame an expectation that as school districts put together their plans, as the different committees that are charged with both developing those plans and providing ongoing professional development for its teaching core, that they're doing that through the lens of increasing the diversity of teachers in their school districts so that it reflects the diversity of their student body. You know, I was a policy chair, and I know there's a lot of folks in the legislature who think that that's, you know, the weaker committee in any stream. I beg to differ. You know, money comes and goes, but policy has a tendency to last, and it's a great motivator for moving systems to do things. And frankly, it's also, they're also a clear expression of what our top goals are, responding to the current needs that exist in society. So I think it's really important as we move forward, Madam Chair, and you and I talked, and we'll work together on some language, that we match up, you know, good, strong policy language that doesn't go as far as, you know, what gave Representative Marquardt some heartburn. I get that, but certainly sends a really strong guidance to our school districts about doing everything possible, not just to recruit and bring in, but quite frankly to retain teachers. We haven't had a lot of talk here around our inability to retain teachers of color. We actually are producing them. We're producing them in very small numbers. That's part of the issue. But the other part of the issue is that, you know, we're bleeding them out of the system. They're leaving in large numbers. And there are reasons for that. And so that gets us to the second part of the bill, which is the Section 8 part, which would empower a group to come forward for the next legislative session to issue recommendations about addressing that entire pipeline issue, from recruitment all the way out to, you know, identification, recruitment, induction, all the way out to retaining teachers of color. I don't mind spending a lot of money on things that really matter. I'll make that argument with the public and with my constituents. But I do mind spending a lot of money when we keep getting the same results over and over again, and those results are not moving us to where we need to be. And I think the way to minimize and to maximize getting us to where, the way to maximize getting us to where we need to get, where we need to be, is to have a modern, strong policy framework that has clear expectations of our entire education system relative to this issue, in this case of this issue of diversity in our teaching core. So I had structured this amendment without speaking to the governor's staff by nicking the future teachers appropriation, because quite frankly, it aligns up with what the expectation of the executive branch is with that. So the chair and I have had a discussion. She's offered in good faith to work with me to be able to come forward with a strong policy frame before we're done with this bill, going out this, going through the session. And so I'm going to take you up on that, Madam Chair. I'll withdraw this amendment for today, and we'll keep the conversation going.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. I appreciate that, and I'm sincere in my word on that, and we'll find a way to come up with an amendment that I think will move us in the direction that you're proposing with your amendment here, but in a way that I'm a little more comfortable with. So we'll
we'll find the great middle ground there. So look forward to working with you on that. So with that, let's see, you've got two more. A14.
I'll try to remove the A14 amendment.
All right. Representative Mariani moves the A14. And go ahead and please describe your amendment.
Madam Chair, members, so this has to do with the changes being proposed to what we call compensatory aid. And we had a good discussion about that the other night. Representative Dabney, I think, laid out a pretty strong base on why we shouldn't be doing what's currently in the language. As I looked at the language, it became clear to me that we were mixing two things here. First of all, let me back up. Overall, the direction of this and of the language before us in the delete all terribly concerns me. And it concerns me because we're inch by inch repurposing what has been a strong, historic, and rightful investment on the part of the legislature targeting our poorest kids. And so this goes back to social science, you know, for decades about the effects of concentrated poverty in particular as a huge barrier for us to be able to construct effective learning environments. And, you know, the science continues to come in. Now there's a whole lot of new science around the neurological effects of concentrated poverty that creates stresses that have been physiologically measured, which, among other things, creates huge barriers for effective learning for students. So what we've done for the longest time, even before we had those studies, is we knew that that was going to that working effectively in those situations was going to require a different set of practices and a different supported by a different set of resources that because some of this was going to require more work than with working with students who are not in poverty. And so what we're doing with this language, and this concerned me last year, it concerns me this year, we settled on 50% of the repurposing, my language, but the repurposing of compensatory aid. This language in the delete all just says, you know, yeah, we get it. Your poorest kids who are concentrated in school lacks are going to generate a bunch of money that we've targeted precisely for that. But if you have a plan, it's okay for you to spend that somewhere else. And so, Madam Chair, I like the idea of us being creative about ways in which we can spend those resources smartly informed by good social science that sticks to the original purpose of providing that additional set of resources and practices for situations where you have concentration of poverty. I don't think that we should be going into that same pot to fund what is our responsibility to fund out of other pots. And so what this language would do then is it would strike out the use of these funds for recruitment of new teacher development, for mentor-led induction, or grow-your-own type efforts. I'm glad that we've got grow-your-own bills here. I think that's the appropriate way to fund that, not use, you know, this existing appropriation that we've historically have set up to do that. And then we also, with the amendment, stop confusing position versus setting. So the language in the delete all talks about the ability for the use of these funds to fill hard-to-fill positions, to produce teachers in hard-to-fill positions. It's a worthy goal. It may have nothing to do with kids in poverty or kids or schools with concentrated poverty. And so I strike out the purpose of hard-to-fill position. But I embrace the hard-to-staff settings because, again, you know, it goes back to the root of how we created this thing. It's where we have concentrations of poverty, right? And so I embrace that with this amendment, and then I back out of the ability of school districts to be able to use, if they have a plan, to be able to use it for purposes other than what's in that subdivision one, and to be able to use 100% of those funds for that. So, Madam Chair, that's the amendment. It really is about trying to keep us, faithful to the core design of our compensatory appropriations and the social science that backs that up. It still allows for some creative use, but it also says, look, you know, don't be using the compensatory aid to fund everything else that you feel you need in your school district. Let's have an honest conversation about what that is, and let's do things like these grow your own bills where we're putting more money directly into those efforts. So, Madam Chair, this is really the right thing to do. I would urge your and the members' support of it.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Any comments or questions? Representative Peterson? No? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of the... all in favor of the A14 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. And Representative Mariani, the A43.
Madam Chair, I move the A43 amendment.
All right. Representative Mariani moves A43 amendment. Representative Mariani, to your amendment.
Madam Chair, let me catch up here a second. Madam Chair, this has to do with the Board of Teaching under teacher licensing processes and procedures, where we're looking to do a one-year professional teacher license that could be available for candidates who have done one of three things. So satisfactorily completed a board-approved teacher prep program, an accredited teacher prep program in another state, or have met all the licensure-specific coursework of an alternative teacher prep program. And this would basically just add that those board, that those alternative teacher programs are board of teaching approved. And quite simply, members, that has to do with, we're Minnesota legislators. We can control, we can guide, we can advise, and we can resource and shape quality teacher prep programs in this state. We don't have the ability to do that in other states. I think most other states do a pretty good job of being able to send us teacher candidates, and we've had this discussion about how incredibly difficult it's been for us as a state to accept them and to move them quickly into teaching positions. And I think we rightfully have done some really strong steps to make sure that we're eliminating those barriers. But that doesn't mean that every program that's outside of the state is producing quality individuals, and that, you know, inputs do matter. You know, what you study and how you prepare does matter. We don't have control over some of those. And so this basically allows us to adopt the language in the delete all amendment, but to make sure that we've got that quality filter relative to alternative teacher prep programs with board approval of our own board of teaching. And so, Madam Chair, it's simply it.
All right. Any discussion? All right. And I have looked at your amendment, Representative Mariani, and I would be favorable on it. So. With that, all in favor of the A43 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Members, that brings us back to the discussion we were having when we recessed. Representative Erickson has withdrawn the A32 amendment, and you should have received from the pages the A32-1
amendment. Madam Chair.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move to amend the title of the A32-1 amendment to the cheeseburger amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. I think we'll stick with civics, but all right. But we do appreciate the cheeseburgers very much. It didn't hurt your cause, Representative Erdahl. All right, so A32-1 is Representative Erickson. Are you offering this amendment?
Here. Madam Chair, officially, I think I need to withdraw the A32 because I had just asked to have it laid over. So,
first
of all, I would withdraw the A32 and offer the 32-1.
All right, so Representative Erickson withdraws the A32. And now offers the A32-1 amendment. All right, Representative Erickson, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I would change the title to read Required Knowledge and Understanding of Civics that includes cheeseburgers. So I've been assured by Representative Erdahl that now there's nothing in here except requiring knowledge and understanding of civics and a test, but no requirement to that goes along with graduation, but I think we should call on the author of this and have him come to the table to clear things up, if you wouldn't mind, Madam
And while
Chair.
He's doing that, Representative Crecia, did you have a comment?
I just wonder if we couldn't have nonpartisan staff walk us through the changes real quick.
I was just going to do that. So, Ms. Larson, if you would just walk us through the changes in the amendment and kind of describe the amendment as it is currently written.
Madam Chair, members, if the members have the A32 amendment, that might be the easiest way to see the changes, because almost everything that is in the A32-1 is from the A32 amendment. So on the A32 amendment, to describe how it was transformed to the A32-1, the following changes occurred. On page 1, line 17, delete, or a student enrolled in an adult basic. Page 1, delete line 18. Page 1, line 19, delete equivalency certificate. Page 1, line 26, delete the colon. Page 2, line 1, delete. Clause 1 must determine the form and manner in which to, and insert may. Page 2, line 2, delete or as an online civics test, comma, consistent with this. Page 2, delete line 3. Page 2, delete lines 4, 5, and 6 up to the period. So the sentence that began on 1.26 now reads, paragraph C, schools and districts may administer civics test questions as part of the social studies curriculum, period. Then on page 2, line 7, delete if. Page 2, line 7, after senior, insert who. Page 2, line 7, after all, insert graduation, and delete for graduation, and delete yet. Page 2, line 8, after answered, and this is a change recommended by Representative Wills, insert at least. And page 2, line 8, delete everything from the comma through the remainder of the line, so delete comma, the principal or other person having. Page 2, delete line 9. Page 2, delete line 10 through the word to and insert may. And then, Madam Chair, members, on page 4 of the amendment, after line 23, it was necessary to insert a qualification on the effective date that's in the omnibus bill, because the language pertaining to the statewide school reports is already amended in the omnibus bill. And what Representative Erdahl is doing is he's inserting an additional data point. And so because the program is being made effective for students enrolling in grade 9 in the 2017 and 2018 school year, there is no reason to require the reporting of that data until the following year after this goes into effect. So on page 4, after line 23, insert the following instruction. Page 27, line 5, which is a reference to the omnibus bill, after the word later, insert the following quotes, comma, except the requirement to report civics test data is effective for the 2018-2019 school year and later. And that, Madam Chair, is the sum total of the changes made in the A32 document.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And not to question the reviser, but if we're going to put in on line 1.17 of the 32.1, at least for consistency's sake, shouldn't we also add that on 1.19, 1.26, and also I think on the back 4.13?
Yeah, so they could have answered both. Yes,
so just a technical.
We will, at the end of this process, inform the reviser to make technical and conforming changes. Representative Erdahl, would you like to explain to all of us in more layman's term what this stuff now does and your intent?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And my.
And please introduce yourself.
I am Representative Dean Erdahl.
Thank you.
Almost forgot there for a moment. My sincere apologies to the committee for any confusion in this bill. There are reasons for what happens sometimes, but I'm not going to get into them. So just understand that the intent was, when you received the amendment earlier today, that there be no mention in here of graduation requirements in passing this test. So that all of those references were not supposed to be there. So I apologize for those that were, but that is my intent. What I want in this bill, in this piece of legislation, is to do something to improve and advance civics education in the state of Minnesota. That's what this is about. I have been becoming more and more concerned that with things happening with reading and science and math, which certainly are very important, we are starting to take away from some other courses, particularly social studies and civics. And I'm not proposing anything more today than doing the civics test, which I think will elevate civics in the public sphere, and will also, most importantly, help our students to learn this very important part. To adequately participate in our country, to live in this country, I think it's very important to know how this country works. And that's what this is all about. It's about empowering groups, all students, to be able to learn, have knowledge, and engage in our process. And that sincerely is all I'm trying to do. And I recognize that this isn't an all-out panacea. It's not, by passing this test, it's not going to guarantee that suddenly you magically become a great citizen of the country, of the state. But knowledge is important, and in connection with other building blocks that we all have in our education process and, in fact, in living, this is part of a foundation. And as I've been saying, it's not the destination of learning. It's not the destination of becoming a citizen, but it's part of the foundation to reach that. And that's all this is about.
All Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Questions? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize. I was out of the room when Ms. Larson was walking through the bill. But I'm wondering, Representative Erdahl, on 1.22 and 1.23, a school or district may administer the civics test questions in a language other than English to students who qualify for English learner services. Where would a district get
translations?
Yes. Get tests in alternative languages than English.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney. I can't give you a real specific answer for that. This is from the federal guidelines that this test is available in languages, other languages than English, and wherever. I guess the translators, if they were not readily available in the school, and some of them would be. You know, but there could be languages that are not. I would assume that contact could be made with the Immigration Naturalization Service or within the school itself. I would imagine that the school, if they are teaching these children and giving them other tests, do have the capacity to translate those tests. If you have a Chinese student who doesn't speak English very well in a school, I would imagine today that you have to have made in that school accommodations for that student for all the other classes, and so you would in this area as well.
Madam Chair,
Representative Dabney.
Representative Erdahl, you've gone a long distance on this. I do think that provision may be problematic because those accommodations for the Chinese student probably are not translation services or interpretation services. And when you look at Minneapolis that has students with coming from, I think it's over 90 different languages spoken at home of our students, the ability to find a civics test that has been translated into all 90 of those languages is probably going to be problematic. And if you're anticipating the school districts doing the translation, then this is an unfunded mandate, because that's going to cost. Somebody's going to have to get paid to do that.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, well, this is something perhaps we need to look at more deeply. But I think that this test probably is available in these other languages through our naturalization services. Mm-hmm. That would be something that I think could be easily verified or checked into. And so I would do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Dabney and Representative Erdahl. Other questions? Yep. Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, just quickly on that point, I hadn't thought about that issue. I was in Worthington a few months ago for a project that my organization is working with schools and students and local elected officials, college, et cetera. And I learned something that I didn't expect to learn. I was speaking with one of the Spanish language translators for the school district, who was certified, trained under the Minsky system. And he was asking me for help, and so we've been doing some communication with Minsky around translations for services for Guatemalans. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, dude, you speak Spanish? I mean, you could do the translation for Guatemalans. And he says, no, Representative Mariani, they don't speak Spanish. They don't speak English, and they don't speak Spanish. They're Guatemalans. They're indigenous people from the highlands of Guatemala. There's a sizable number of them in Worthington. They form an important part of the local labor force there in meat processing. They've been recruited, for that work. And they're scrambling to find folks who speak the native indigenous languages for the sake of professional services. So all that by illustrating that, when we put a requirement, for students, we're going to have to think really carefully about how do we then make sure we're not setting them up for failure simply because, in this case, we don't have the ability for them to take the test in their their language. So I appreciate the spirit that you want to continue to work on this. We should definitely do that. But I do think Representative Dabney raises a really important issue about a potential unfunded mandate here. If there's a requirement for students, then school districts are going to have to find a way and then pay for that. And if we're going to set that expectation, it seems to me the state ought to be paying for it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Representative Mariani, but of course, what about all of the other tests in the school that the student is taking? In my concept of this, this test is not a new test. It's not a standalone test, but it is incorporated to a test that they already would be taking. And so whether it's the civics test or an English test or what other test, what is being done for these students to interpret or to translate that test? This is, I guess, much bigger than what you're referring to. The point is, if they are taking this test and need a translator, well, then if they're in that school, they should need translators for all the other tests.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Larson, and the others that worked on this during the recess. It is much improved. Representative Erdahl, I understand exactly what you're saying about the need for this. And I used to do this. I used to get the citizenship tests from the courts after they had finished doing it for the people that received their citizenship, and use those tests in my class. And the kids like to think, because it worked, because I had high school kids and they knew most of the answers to the tests. And they thought, well, this is pretty good. But if they had started from nothing, they would have known not nearly as much and not been nearly as self-satisfied with themselves. But that, all that being said, I still have problems with line 122 and 123 and line 125 and 126 to 127. We're still relating to graduation and the high school senior. And so I would be happy if we stopped writing after the word curriculum in line 125. And on the other point about students could take it in a different language, I think that's wonderful. Why couldn't the Spanish teacher work with the social studies teacher, and the kids that are taking Spanish read the questions in Spanish and give the answers in Spanish? They're not necessarily English answers. They're the right answers. Or the French teacher, or the German teacher. So why just limit? But that goes into a bigger part of it. And so those are the two parts that I'm still not comfortable with.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. So you have one specific question, and you were just expressing concerns about the other. Okay. Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, despite the fact that Representative Erdahl is the reason we're still here at 6 o'clock in the evening, yeah. I understand his passion on this topic in this area, and I would support the A32-1 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's still a real problem. The language, and I think especially because the word must is in 1.17, that instead of 1.26 and 0.27, it would be best to say shall not be refused graduation or a diploma because of failure to correctly answer at least 30 of 50 civics test questions. Otherwise, the person can still be turned down.
Madam Chair.
I think nonpartisan staff would like to make a comment to that. Ms. Larson?
Madam Chair, members, my understanding in various conversations with Representative Erdahl is that the purpose of the sentence that begins on page 1, line 25, is to answer a logical question, and that is, if we're going to require that students answer at least 30 of 50 questions, what happens if they don't? And the point here is to say that nothing, there is no consequence in terms of graduation. And however you express it, I would suggest that if we're going to put a requirement in the statutes obligating children to take and answer at least 30 of 50 questions, it begs the subsequent question of, well, what consequence, if any, ensues if this this expectation is not met?
Representative Moore.
Madam Chair, that's the exact problem. With the way it is worded in 126, they can be refused graduation based on it. And at least some of us don't believe that that should happen. And then if you use the language I had, then they can't be turned down for it. Otherwise, they can be.
How?
And I believe, and just to confirm, Representative Erdahl, it is not your intention that someone be refused graduation.
Well, no, Madam Chair. I mean, I don't know. I didn't go to law school, so I can't figure this out. But it says a high school senior who has completed all graduation requirements but has not correctly answered 30 of 50 civics test questions may graduate and receive a diploma.
Madam Chair, may means could be, but they could be turned down for that reason. Whereas if you use my language, then they can't be turned down for that
reason.
Do you
want will?
No. If you just say, if you change the sentence to say, a high school senior has completed all graduation requirements, shall not be refused graduation or a diploma because of failure to correctly answer at least 30 of 50 civics test questions.
Let's just turn may to shall.
Shall not graduate.
Jim, I don't think that's what you want.
And Madam Chair, we've been having a sidebar here on this, and I think that actually will, if you say they will graduate, that's pretty definitive.
You think what?
If you say they will graduate and receive a diploma.
Just a minute, I don't know. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Changing the word may to will, as you suggested also, I think that covers it. It's very definitive.
All right, Ms. Larson, if in line 126 the word may was changed to will?
Well, I think that's wrong because
Madam Chair, members, one way to fix this may be maybe to replace may with shall, but there is a question raised by this, and that is there are state graduation requirements and local graduation requirements, and it is conceivable that a local district may decide that one of the conditions for graduating is to successfully answer 30 of 50. So to say are eligible, if you say must you or shall, then there is no discretion at the local level.
which one?
Thank you. Important component. A couple other people that wanted to comment on this. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there seems to be an ambiguity in the latter part of the amendment to line 1.19. Maybe a simple solution is to delete the word correctly. Just answer 30 of 50 questions and forget about whether it's correct. Then you've fulfilled your civic obligation.
All right. Representative Quam.
I've been informed I cannot call the question, so
no.
I pass.
No, you may not. Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And unfortunately, Representative Newton isn't correct. The reason that I phrased it that way was because if they've met all graduation requirements, you could meet all graduation requirements and also have broken some rule that is a prevention from graduation. So if you say it that way, then you are ruling that out.
I think you raise
really
a good point.
Madam Chair.
So when you restate your earlier suggestion, Representative Mallory.
My suggestion, thank you, Madam Chair. A high school senior who has completed all graduation requirements shall not be refused graduation or a diploma because of failure to correctly answer at least 30 of 50 civics test questions.
Shall not be refused graduation or diploma.
No, I think there are more cheeseburgers over there.
Right. Ms. Larson, do you need that repeated?
Madam Chair, members, I always prefer to state the actor. So I think taking what Representative Mallory is suggesting, but directing it to a district, and I haven't written fast enough, but the idea is a district must not deny a diploma to a student who has successfully completed all graduation requirements but has not correctly answered at least 30 of 50 civics test questions.
Does that Madam Chair, as the author, I agree that that's a better change.
Representative Murphy, do you wish to say something?
Oh, Madam Chair, we have a bill here that's an omnibus bill, an acceptable bill, a bill that the policy committee worked very hard on, listened to lots of testimony for. Finance committee, you had a zero target. It's over $55 million that we found. Positive things. You left out things that were not as positive and came out with this bill. And here we're talking about a very important subject for human beings from birth to death, civics, responsible citizenship, in an education bill where we all truly believe that all children can learn and that the things that are presented for them to learn in school, whether it's a home school or a private school or a public school in a big area or a little tiny area, should be positive. And here we're talking about denial. So let's say all students that answer 30 or more questions correctly
shall be honored by their school at the time, in some way, within the year of the time that they complete their accomplishment.
Must not prevent a student from graduating.
And not tied to anything else. And it can be part of the social studies curriculum, and the kid gets a prize, or the kid gets honored at the spring honors assembly, or at the fall banquet, or whatever. Or maybe the mayor and the judge and the court,
or deny.
You know, it could be a civic ceremony or something.
A high school.
And let
merely because
the seniors graduate when they graduate with the present requirements, and just have this as a little addendum.
Failing to. Thank you, Representative Murphy. I think you raise a good point, and there certainly would be many opportunities for the schools to do this.
Okay.
That's real good.
So a district must not.
Representative.
Or deny a student.
Oh, absolutely.
For failing to correct.
That's good.
Mullery.
So Madam Chair, I think she's got real good language.
Okay.
Do you want?
Okay.
She can read her language better than I can.
All right, Ms. Larson.
Okay.
I was going to suggest a technical change.
Yes, a technical change. Madam Chair, on the A32-1 amendment, page 1, line 25, delete a high school senior who has completed all graduation requirements. Page 1, line 26, delete but has not. And insert, a district must not prevent a student from graduating or deny a student a high school diploma for failing to. And Madam Chair, on page 1, line 26, delete may graduate and receive A, and page 1, line 27, delete diploma. So the sentence would read, a district must not prevent a student from graduating or deny a student a high school diploma for failing to correctly answer 30 of 50 civics, at least, for failing to answer at least 30 of 50 civics test questions, period.
All right.
Sounds good to me.
Do I need anyone to reread that again? I think we got it.
Yeah.
All right. So, Ms. Larson, thank you for that technical change to lines 125, 126, and 127 of the A32-1 amendment. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, I just hope you'll agree with me that the record should reflect that the several technical changes and drafting errors that we've contended with today are the responsibility of the authors of the amendment and not staff.
Duly noted, Representative Yavney. All right. And Representative Erickson is doing us a favor by offering that. So with that, further comments? Seeing none. All in favor of the A32-1 amendment with the technical correction so stated by Ms. Larson, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Was opposed?
No.
All right. Amendment is adopted. All right.
Well, that was easy.
So.
Thanks.
Bring the balls next.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. All right, members, we still just another couple of things here. So with that, we have completed the list of amendments that were filed and to the delete all. So now I will move the adoption of the A16-1062 amendment as amended. And
All right, so that's the first motion. So with that, all in favor of adoption of the A16-1062 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the amendment as amended has been adopted. And so now I would move adoption and refer to taxes House File 3858 as amended, with instructions that the reviser and nonpartisan staff make all necessary technical and grammatical corrections, and by request of MMB that wherever the language, quote, this appropriation does not cancel and is available until June 30th, 2019, end quote, appears, to delete the words, quote, does not cancel and, period, end quote. So, with that, all in favor of adoption of House File 3858 as amended? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Murphy.
Are we going to have a discussion?
Oh, if you would like to have a discussion, absolutely.
I have a couple of questions.
Absolutely.
A couple of points. Madam Chair, we've adopted the Erdahl Amendment, and there's still a fiscal note on that. Because we adopted the Erdahl or the amendment to allow the civic stuff, and it's not a standard or a graduation requirement, then do we just go and assume then that the costs of the testing and posting of and keeping of the information and that kind of thing on each student's test will be a local expense?
Representative Murphy, yes, that would be a local expense. I do know, as Ms. Johnson had stated earlier, that a fiscal note is being prepared. And it will have to reflect the language has been adjusted. And so we may not. Do you have any idea, Ms. Johnson, when that would be prepared? How soon we would have that?
Madam Chair, I don't know specifically, but I know that now that the grad requirement is gone, that almost all of the costs are eliminated.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Representative Murphy.
All of the costs are.
Madam Chair, I would have to get confirmation, but to my understanding that all of the costs would be eliminated.
Eliminated for the state.
Correct.
But not for the local school district. Okay. The second fiscal note is on Representative Bennett's bill 3854, the Glenville Amens fix.
Yes, either Mr. Strom, did you want to comment on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, Ms. Johnson and I are in discussions with MDE about the number. We suspect it's going to be relatively close to what we have estimated for that provision once the fiscal note is republished. The note that was published earlier today was recalled, and the number that the new aid number that we're probably going to arrive at will be somewhere close to the number that's in the bill, within $15,000 or $20,000 probably.
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Strom, about it's going to be within the number in the bill. What is the number in the bill?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the bill is carrying a number of about $35,000. And there's still a little bit of back and forth about how a portion of the referendum called the tax-based replacement aid is going to be handled. And the other issue that's still outstanding is the school district itself is allowed to adopt up to $300 per pupil of board-approved referendum and has not done so yet. Should the board do that, part of the question is that part of the base or not? And at this point in time, I think it's MDE's starting to feel that $300 would be part of the base. if the board is intent on adopting that $300. So that's part of the confusion on why we don't have a firm number there yet.
Okay. And Madam
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, are you confident that in the money that you found that that sum of money can be, that you have enough money to pay for whatever it costs?
Yes, I am, Representative Murphy. And we have actually set aside $65,000 for fiscal note compliance for MDE, so just to a little insurance.
Okay. Insurance is good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Other comments or discussion? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I think on balance you have a pretty good bill here. It's got bipartisan elements in it, and it's always a mark of a good chair and a good process. There are pieces in here that do cost me heartburn. I am very concerned about the changes that are proposed here for compensatory aid, as I explained earlier in my amendment. And I suspect we'll be continuing to have that discussion on that issue. I would look forward to working with you as we agreed on the teacher of color issue. I think it's critically important that this legislative session speak very firmly on policy expectations in regards to diversifying our teaching corps. So I look forward to working with you throughout the process and a floor discussion on that. So anyway, I guess, you know, as a former chair, my kudos to you for putting together a good balanced bill. As I said, I do have some issues that with the bill that still continue to concern me, but that's not unusual in this place. So.
Well, thank you, Representative Mariani, and I really appreciate those comments very much. You know, we all work hard here on the committee, but I, as chair, strive very hard to try to produce a balanced bill and listen and pay attention to all the proposals brought forward. And I think, you know, we've got great proposals from both sides of the aisle incorporated into what we had. And I must credit our staff as well, and nonpartisan and partisan, for, I think, being very creative in what we were able to do here with a zero target. And so I... you know, modestly must say I'm kind of proud of what we were able to do. So I appreciate that, and it was very much so a joint effort. And I look forward to working with you. And I think you're correct. I think this session it is important to make a strong statement about you know, our teacher workforce and what we're doing to try to make sure that all of our students are succeeding and how we go about that. And we've had some of those discussions. I know more will continue. And so I do look forward to working with you on that specific amendment in that language as well. All right. Any other points of discussion? All right. If not, I would renew my motion, and I won't read all the specifics back again unless anybody wants it. But just move adoption and referral to taxes of House File 3858 as amended and with those instructions that I delineated earlier. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Bill is adopted and on its way to taxes. Members, thank you very much. I don't know if this will be our last meeting. I have actually been approached by a couple of members on some informational hearings, and I'll just kind of consider the schedule, and I know it's a busy time for everyone with committees right now, but just be watching for that. But in the meantime, I do want to take a chance, just in case, to thank some very important people that we all rely on heavily, or we could not do our work here. And I'll just start first with Kevin Baer, who is our reviser in the reviser's office, who takes all of our suggestions and converts them into language. Tim Strom, Mr. Strom, our nonpartisan staff, Ms. Lisa Larson, our nonpartisan staff, Melissa Johnson, our fiscal staff. Our pages, M. Anton and Rachel Kohler, you've done an amazing job for us and getting those copies produced despite, you know, cataclysmic breakdowns in the duplicating room. You've soldiered through. Thank you very much. Jessica Nyman, DFL Research. Gabrielle Haughey, our GOP Research.
Doreen Keynes, who I absolutely could not function without, our committee legislative assistant, and also Jody Withers, who does a tremendous job, I think, for all of us as our committee administrators. So thank you, one and all, for all of your tremendous work. Thank you, members. I'm really gratified by your support for the bill. And with that, committee is adjourned. Thank you.